This meeting is now being recorded.
Thank you. It's got a great turnout and appreciate all that. There was quite a bit of activity on our documents since our last call. The agenda, which is displayed on the right, we'll definitely note everyone who's in the Adobe. I'm unaware of any apologies that we've received via email. My co-rapporteurs will pipe in if they know of any. We will review briefly our last call and action items coming out of that, and then a discussion about to whom SOs and ACs are actually accountable to. We left off our last discussion with that very topic as we explored a table that opened up the bylaws and said that these periodic reviews of the ACs and SOs, the ones that the board is required to do every 5 years by an independent reviewer, they always looked at the effectiveness of the SOAC. But now, as a result of our Workstream 1 changes to the bylaws, we also look at a dimension of accountability to the underlying community that they represent. And each of the reviews will now look at that. So Alan and a number of us were discussing that, trying to make sure that we understood what the intention is of expanding that accountability. And we ended our call without any clear consensus, of course. It's still early to do that. But given that Tuesday was the full plenary call, we had a great opportunity to present a progress report on where our group is. We've had more calls than any other Workstream 2 group, and frankly, I think we've made more progress than most of the others. So the co-chairs of CCWG on the plenary asked us to give a brief update, and I said, well, while we're at it, I'll present the sort of dilemma, the question we're considering, the key question about accountability to the members of an SOAC for the bylaws or accountability to the broader internet community outside of the membership. Hoping to learn a little bit from our colleagues in the full plenary, but frankly, think of it as a dry run where if this document represented where we are and we presented an idea like that to the full plenary, I can give you a preview that there was a lot of confusion. So nothing new there. So if there aren't any other comments, I thought I would dive into the 5 slides we presented to the plenary. If you could put that up first, staff. None of this is new to you, but Farzi and Cheryl will help me to recap the sort of discussion that ensued. It probably went on for 15 minutes or so on the full plenary call, and I think it does inform us about where the rest of CCWG is coming from. It's only 5 slides, so I'll go through it quickly. Remember, the Workstream 2 section of the bylaws says that our group, our job, was to review and develop, according to the final report, this Roman numeral 3, which was SOAC accountability, and we had to, at a minimum, look at improved processes for accountability, processes for transparency, and processes for participation that are helpful to prevent capture. So that's what's in the bylaws for our charter. Now, since the first sentence of that charter says, to the extent set forth in the accountability report, I'm going to turn to the next 2 slides, which discuss what's in the accountability report. And this has all been in our Google Doc, and we've discussed it several times before. So the second slide says 2 recommendations really charter us on Workstream 2. One is Rec 12. And Rec 12 says to us, we should look at accountability in the ATRT process. And there is a line in there about accountability in an ATRT. We should evaluate the Mutual Accountability Roundtable, propose a detailed plan on enhancing accountability, and also assess whether the IRP would be applicable. Farzi organized our Google Doc to have tracks that map to these 4 items from Rec 12. The second rec coming out of our final report is recommendation 10, and it's on the 3rd slide. It had suggested that in Workstream 1 that we wanted the bylaws to be changed so that the review of SO and AC accountability mechanisms occur in the independent structural reviews that I just spoke of. And that is why little Roman numeral 3 was added to the independent structural reviews. And it asks the question whether the SOAC is accountable to its constituency, stakeholder groups, organizations, and other stakeholders. I believe based on the work that we did in CCWG that its constituencies is repeated. Its constituencies, its stakeholder groups, its organizations, and other stakeholders that are members of it. So I read Recommendation 10 as internal accountability, not external accountability. And the word internal means the members of a constituency. So if that's what's out there, I then told the plenary that we had a question. And, of course, this was coming out of our last call. And our question was, should we seek to increase the accountability of each of these SOs and ACs to the global community beyond its membership, not just to its members themselves? Because places like things like capture and participation are really about an SO and AC's accountability to the target group that it's supposed to serve. And our bylaws are pretty explicit about what each of us in our SOs and ACs, who are the members, who are the target communities. So when I put this question up there, I thought an example would help. And I'm not picking on CCNSO, it's just an example. So I said that, for example, the CCNSO was created with CCTLD managers as its members. That's in the bylaws. It's not even arguable. I think that someone asked in the Google Doc, does it include CCTLD managers who don't join? Well, it doesn't. Our current bylaws say that the members of the CCNSO are CCTLD managers who join the constituency. But I think we could all suggest that if there's a target population of CCTLD managers, many of whom don't even join, you would want to ask the question from the second slide. Is the CCNSO open enough? Is it welcoming enough so that its target membership is joining and participating? Because if they're not, then we're not fulfilling their true mission there. So the final slide that I presented in this plenary, and then I'm happy to get some help from Farzi and Cheryl on the discussion that occurred, was that Bernie and staff had highlighted for me that there really are several ways in which each of our SOs and ACs are currently already held accountable beyond the SO and AC members. And just really very quickly, some of our SOs have liaisons. The bylaws require that GNSO have a liaison from, for instance, ALAC, ESSAC. And so that liaison is part of the deliberations of that particular AC and SO, and certainly gives you transparency. I don't know for sure that it delivers on accountability, but it means that the rest of the community can see what's happening inside of CCNSO or GNSO. Second, some SOs and ACs have to consider public comment on the policies they develop and submit to the board, and that is an additional element of transparency. It remains to be seen how an SO and AC has to then consider those public comments, particularly when they come from members of the global internet public outside of their membership. That's going to require research because we'll need to discover how it's done in each SO and AC because they're different. And that's not required in the bylaws. Third, the board itself of ICANN has to approve any SO and AC policy or decision that falls within the purview of policy development, for instance. And when it approves that policy, the board is supposed to make that decision in the global public interest, not just whether a particular GNSO policy serves the members of the GNSO. So that's the third way in which there's a broader global public interest at the point of approval. And finally, every 5 years when the ATRT, the Accountability and Transparency Review Team, comes together, it's supposed to assess whether ICANN's decisions are embraced, supported, and accepted by the public and the internet community. That's not new, folks. This is all these items are part of the existing bylaws for over a decade. So they are ways in which an SO and AC is held accountable. And then we opened it for questions, and the discussion was not particularly robust, but we did end up settling on many people believing that the preferred tool to hold any given SO and AC accountable to the global community was this vague sense of what a mutual accountability roundtable might be. But I have to confess that the people on that call Tuesday had a very different view of mutual accountability roundtable than what is on our document, because we were basing it as a sharing of best practices and lessons learned, exactly the way Willie Curry described it in his May 2015 email. But there are some on the call who believe that there was far more accountability than would be in that roundtable. The roundtable is a discussion, so it certainly brings transparency But at least as it was originally conceived, I would hate for everyone to suddenly assume that the Mutual Accountability Roundtable delivers this accountability to the whole world. So I'll stop there. Farzi and Cheryl, do you want to go first? And then we'll just open the queue.
Steve, if I may, Cheryl here. I just wanted to explore, and Bernie did allude to this in our plenary meeting, and using the example of the CCNSO that was outlined in the slides. Of course, as you stated, you indicated, is it opening and welcoming to other CCTLD managers to join? That's an aspect. The other aspect, of course, is, and this is in that example, the way that the CCNSO has operated, and I think very laudably and demonstrably since its inception, there is no barrier to engagement and involvement to non-member CCTLD operators. And in fact, what we have seen in that particular SO over the many years it's now run, over a decade, that it has always not only been open to but actively pursued the opinions and has ensured place at the space of the policy table and practices and rules of procedure development tables for non-CCTLD non-member CCTLD managers. And in fact, if one looked at the highly active participants over the years, one would be surprised to see that some of the most vociferous and influential people in what we see as the CCNSO have in fact either still not joined as members or have only recently joined as members as they've taken leadership positions. So that's another measure, and I think that's a valid accountability construct. And we may find some of the other ACs and SOs have similarly unique but specifically valid aspects to their accountability. Thank you.
This is Steve. Thank you, Cheryl. Go ahead, Farzi.
As a refreshing point and also a point that kind of like going back to the question to whom SO and ACs are able to, and that was one of the questions that was related to this broader question to whom SO and ACs are accountable to was presented by Steve. And then the answer that Matthew Viral, he responded that as a CCNSO appointed member, I can assume with quite a bit of assurance that the CCNSO is not expecting that it's to be required more to be more accountable to the community. I think this is quite important to note that also Alan Greenberg mentioned during the last call that when we say stakeholder groups, what do we mean? Do we mean the actual members, or do we mean the stakeholder groups in general who are not even members? And I think we might want to, within our group, to come up with an answer to that, whether the accountability that we are looking at is solely restricted to our members, and then when and also when we look at other aspects, we might want to look at it when we are answering the question what we are accountable for. So these are the two questions that I think should go hand in hand. But I think the most important question at the moment is the stake, whether what we are looking at is accountability to the members and not being close to the wider stakeholder group, or and also what are we accountable for.
Thank you, Farzi, for clarifying that. That was very helpful. This is Steve Del Bianco. I did want to note that we don't really have any doubt about SOs and ACs being accountable to their members. The bylaws make that clear, and it's part of the reviews that now occur. The question we're perceiving is, do we need to enhance CCNSO's accountability to the global internet community, or GNSO's accountability to the global internet community? And having once we answer that question, I think the how you hold them accountable ends up requiring us to explore specific mechanisms, whether it's the existing structural reviews, the board's decisions, or perhaps something new like the Mutual Accountability Roundtable. So why don't we take a cue? I guess we'll start with Christopher Wilkinson, but on this discussion of accountability. Go ahead, Christopher. We're not hearing you.
Provided for already in the bylaws and in
Christopher, we've just now heard you. So if you were saying anything before the words "just now provided," you should start.
Okay.
Over.
Okay, I'll start over. This well, first of all, Steve, I think you're right, and I agree that the accountability of the SOs and the ACs is very largely provided for in the bylaws and in and in long-standing practice in ICANN. I think that is not really an issue. That is the accountability of the SOs and the ACs to their members. And if it's not sufficient or adequate or deteriorates, I think it's primarily and initially a matter for the members to correct that. What we're talking about here, in my view, is essentially the accountability of the delegates and representatives of the SOs and ACs in the new structures created by the transition, their accountability to their SOAC. This is important. It means that third parties or other SOs and ACs need to have confidence that the delegates who are representing other SOAC are accountable to their entity, and what they're saying and what they're voting for, what they're doing, is a reflection of the policy of that SOAC. This is the gist of the directive against eventual capture. Obviously it's not automatic. Things move quickly. People have to take positions in conference calls and in meetings under circumstances that they cannot consult all their members or their SOAC on the spot. But I think that is the issue that needs to be addressed in this case. We should be looking at the incremental new accountability requirements that derive directly from the transition and the creation of several new entities in which the SOs and the ACs will be represented. Thank you.
Lower the hand.
Steve, you might be muted, and Fazi, you might want to take the next person in the queue if Steve's muted.
Yes, thanks, Cheryl. So there's no one in the queue. I wanted to add that also with regards to the MAR and the Mutual Accountability Roundtable, it was meant during the plenary that this could be used as a soft approach to understand the approaches of other SO and ACs to accountability. And so we can look at it as a kind of like a soft approach. It does not bind SO and ACs to each other or accountable to each other, but it is good for presenting best practices. So that was also mentioned as well. What I think, if no one has any comments now, I think we could also go to question number two, which is the agenda number two, which is what are the SO and ACs accountable for? And this is of importance because if you look at our Google Doc and during our meetings, it was mentioned that the scope of this accountability of SO and AC, each SO and AC has to be clarified, as also Athena mentioned and a couple of other people, that its scope should be established. So if we can go to question number two, what are SO and ACs accountable to, and if we can get some comments on that, what are they accountable for?
Farzi, it's Steve. In the Google Doc, I wanted to point out to folks that on pages 3 and 4, I created a table that took from the bylaws how each of the 7 SOs and ACs are created by ICANN and who their memberships are and what their role is. You could suggest at a minimum that an SO and AC is accountable to perform its role. It's accountable to perform its role. So let me just give you one example. I'll pick ALAC. The bylaws say that ALAC's role is to consider and provide advice on the activities of ICANN insofar as they relate to the interests of individual internet users. There's a similar role described on each and every SO and AC. So at the bare minimum, you would say that what we are accountable for is the performance of those roles. And there may not really be anything else we're accountable for. And earlier we debated the idea of how do we know whether ALAC is performing that role? Well, the first place you check is with ALAC members. And are the members able to hold its organization accountable for making those decisions and communicating them effectively to the rest of ICANN? And then we examined the second level question of is the ALAC also accountable and how to the broader internet community. So is that, so far as you, just let me do a little bit of a dialogue with you since I don't see any other hands up. Does that begin to answer what the SOs and ACs are accountable for? And that is the role, verbatim role of each SO and AC in the bylaws where the SOs and ACs are actually created. I might ask staff to put up the Google Doc. They don't mind. This table that I was speaking of is contained in the Google Doc on pages 3 and 4. Matthew Shears, if you have audio, I know you've been very active in the Google Doc adding some comments. If you have audio, it'd be great to have you weigh in with some of the things that you added to the doc and explain them.
I don't want to jump the queue, but I'm happy to do so if you wish, Steve.
Hey, you are the queue, Matthew. There is no queue other than you.
Okay, perfect. So I think what you were describing, Steve, is a very useful point of departure. What I wanted to do was just in terms of embellishing that a little bit and looking at what we as a community throughout the past 2 years or so in developing the accountability proposal is just to refer us back to the one of the annexes of the final proposal, which is which deals with the methodology that we used. And in that methodology, we did actually, as a community, outline some key criterion for measuring accountability. So if it's possible to go to the very last page of the Google Doc, I think it's useful to actually look at those. It's actually Appendix C, which is called Background and Methodology of the Final Proposal, the Final Accountability Proposal. And in that it reflects a number of discussions that we held quite early on in the working group, which is really to kind of understand what we meant by accountability. And you'll see that in the Google Doc at the end, I don't see it on the page, but anyway, I'll just go ahead and read it. In Appendix C, it talks about that accountability is comprised of four dimensions, which I think we should, you know, we probably might want to consider as a part of our overall scoping of this issue. And those dimensions are transparency, which means that in this case, an SOAC is answerable to its stakeholders by being open and visible to them. Consultation, which means that an SOAC continually takes input from and explains its positions to the stakeholders. A review means that the SOAC's actions, policies, programs are subject to outside monitoring and evaluation. And redress, which means that the SOAC makes compensations for any harms of its actions and omissions, for example, by means of policy changes, reforms, resignations, financial reparations, etc. Now, I think there's value to us considering how we might look at these particular interpretations of accountability. I think one of the challenges that we face, and I think this is perhaps a bigger issue, which is how we scope this particular issue. If we can scope it relatively narrowly, if we're going to focus on, for example, as I've suggested, where we look at really on the working plan and how we bring about enhancements to SO and AC accountability, it is going to require us at some point in time to define how we're going to do that, what we mean by a working plan, what we mean by enhancing accountability, and whether or not we're going to have to consider some form of criterion or some way of measuring what that accountability, how successful that accountability is. After all, we are tasked with trying to pull together recommendations on how that accountability can be enhanced. So I think we're going to have to, at some point in time, grapple with the scope of what we're trying to do. And if we agree that we need a set of measurements or criterion to actually assess or for the SOs and ACs to assess themselves how much they've met and what they've done in terms of accountability, then I think there's some use to looking at, in addition to some of the criteria that we've already been talking about, some of the things that we've used through the process over the past 2 years. So I think there are some big issues that we have to answer, one of which is, again, what do we mean, or how do we interpret enhancing accountability? What do we mean by a working plan? And from my perspective, I think, and I'll throw this in the mix now because we've talked about it a little bit, but the things like the Mutual Accountability Roundtable, well, very possibly quite important, I think in a way they're secondary to us understanding some of these more fundamental issues about how are we defining enhancing, how are we defining the working plan, and things like that. So my suggestion, which is kind of a long way of answering your question, Steve, and I apologize for that, is really that I think we have to really kind of focus in on what we want to start with. And if starting with the working plan, which is in a way our deliverable, then we need to sit down and have a good think about what we mean by the various elements of that working plan. Thanks, and sorry for taking so long.
Matthew, thank you. This is Steve Del Bianco. I sincerely appreciate that insight. I would say that you raised the right question, but I'd like to take this opportunity and disagree with your potential answer. When you added Appendix C, the background and methodology of defining accountability in the four dimensions, it contains things like redress, It contains things like respect for legislation, due process, jurisdictional operation, security performance. And it's clear that we, the CCWG, we created those criteria of accountability about 2.5 years ago when we were trying to ensure that ICANN, the entity called ICANN, was accountable for its actions. I don't think we should apply the very same criteria to each SONAC, which is a small group created inside of ICANN with a very constrained role and a well-defined population of potential members. So while it is useful to dive into our documents, we do that all the time here, if we take what you've proposed for ICANN accountability and try to map it onto the SOs and ACs, I'm afraid much of it will not apply and actually won't tee us up to get any better progress on our tasks. And for those of you seeking to read what it is Matthew's talking about, it's on pages 15 and 16 of the Google Doc. I think I explained in the chat that it doesn't display well when you render a PDF from a Google Doc, particularly in the font that Google Doc associated with Matthew Shears. It's sort of a baby blue, and it doesn't render at all.
That's right? Steve, share with you.
I know. So Matthew, I pushed back on you.
Can I just come in?
Yeah, I wanted to ask you how wedded you are to those ICANN accountability measures for the SOs and ACs, and then we'll go to the queue. Go ahead, Matthew.
Steve, no, you're absolutely right. The reason why I put that in there is because.
Yep.
Can you hear me?
We do.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Steve. No, you are absolutely right. I am not suggesting that we apply the same kind of criteria that we have applied for ICANN, the organization as a whole. But what I'm suggesting is that we have addressed and looked at various criteria, and I think that there is probably some value to looking at those criteria, assessing whether or not they're appropriate to measuring accountability and seeing how, based on that measurement, it's possible to enhance accountability. So I think it's not so much a matter of applying it lock, stock, and barrel, but it's more a matter of looking at what we've agreed and what we've explored in the past as possible criterion and then using those or not. I think there's merit in looking at those, but I completely agree with you that a number of them will not be applicable. But I think it's probably worthwhile us looking at the things that we've already talked about and discussed at some length in the past. If we're going to go down the route of assessing and measuring in some form or another the accountability of the SOs and ACs. But I agree, but that was more my intent to kind of show that we have discussed various criteria in the past and that we could use those, but we'd obviously have to have a greater discussion about which ones are applicable. Thanks.
Matthew, while I wait for others to raise their hand, this is Steve Delbianco. Whatever criteria we use for the accountability, remember the bylaws instruct our group. The bylaws have a charter for our group, and we're supposed to look at improved processes for accountability, transparency, and participation that is helpful to prevent capture. That was on slide one. The way you look at those four dimensions, it depends upon whether you're addressing the members of an SOAC. You and I live together in GNSO. GNSO might be developing a policy for the next round of generic TLDs. The accountability to the constituent parts of the GNSO for the purpose of developing that policy is something entirely separate from trying to answer the question, is GNSO's policy development process adequately accountable to people outside of GNSO? And that's why we have to literally look at it two places. Karen Mulberry has pasted onto the screen the actual appendix that Matthew and I have been discussing. And I thought I heard somebody speak. Go right ahead, please.
Yeah, it was Cheryl, who I think still metaphorically had her hand up. If not actually, because I'm not in the AC room. The reason I asked for the microphone at the finish of Matthew's first intervention was because I wanted to make some points which are very much in sync with the ones that he then made in his clarifying follow-up. I think the exercise Matthew has proposed, perhaps not so much a mapping as you've described it, Steve, but rather an overlay. Let's look at the overlay of those original constructs that we worked on for ICANN-wide accountability and see where there is a meshing, where there is use, where we believe as a work team that there could be merit of exploring one or more of those aspects, and I think it probably will be more than one, as applicable to the specifics of our ACSO accountability. So I think that's an exercise well worthwhile pursuing in the next little piece of our work. And so Matthew, if and when I ever get our new modem routers and get back onto the internet, I look forward on perhaps working with you and seeing is there another way we can in some tabular form or graphic form help others understand what the benefits to that could be. Because I think that could be something that is a nice piece of foundational work, and that will then give us some subsection within our work plan to follow on in with more detailed discussion, recognising that there could very well be still variability between the various ACs and the FOs. So, yeah, thanks for that. I'm sorry I'm in the dark, literally, and blind to what's going on in the AC room, but may I just say I am now going to have trouble thinking of Matthew in anything else but maybe.
Thank you, Cheryl. And Farzi, your hand is up.
Thank you, Steve. Going back to the question on the scope of the accountability, first, we keep getting these questions popping up about whom we are accountable to and what we are accountable for. So I think, we address them and then we never finalize it. So I thought I think the starting point that you mentioned in the table is okay, but I would like to get some feedback from the ASO members, for example, that raised the issue of the scope of accountability. For example, Athena mentioned that a lot of the policy discussions are not taking place within ICANN, while some of the SOAR and ACs, the discussions take place within ICANN. And so what sort of accountability do we mean when we say accountability of the ASOs? So we are talking here about like limited accountability for some of the SO and ACs, or do we have to clarify that? So I think as I'm in the call, I don't know if she's hearing us, if we can also think a little bit what we are accountable for, which is in our document, we have representation and also outreach. But I think we need to come up with a plan that what is it, what sort of mechanisms should we have? And of course, the ALAC is not accountable for providing water for 4 billion new internet users. It is limited to the ICANN mission. It is limited to ICANN mission, and also it is then the question comes up that so are they also limited to their members or the stakeholder groups? I think if we can understand accountability as accountability for the four things that you said, representation, inclusion, transparency, reporting. So if we can consider a limit kind of the scope that we're talking about, then we might have a clear vision. And we might also have an answer to who are we accountable to and what are we accountable for. Thanks.
Thank you, Farzi. I noted in the chat that I know staff is scrambling to give us a viewable piece of our Google Doc, but they actually omitted the top part where Matthew laid out five of his ideas for what we could look at: representation, inclusion, transparency, reporting, and responsibility. Appendix C was added by Matthew to show what it was CCWG did when we said, what does ICANN's accountability mean? So that's right, Matthew. I understood. So the temptation here is to believe we're starting with a clean slate and can invent a lot of this from whole cloth. And yet, I've endeavored to show what the bylaws asked us to look at, as well as what is in existing structural reviews of ICANN and ATRT. And that's because the bylaw that created us says that we are to review and develop, not just develop anew, but review and develop. So I truly believe our charter is to look at the ways HSONAC is accountable to its target community and membership, and ways in which it is accountable to the broader internet community. And if we review those first as to what the status quo is, that should identify for us whether there are gaps. And I understand Matthew's point that if you have criteria established ahead of time, then gaps become more apparent in that criteria. So I fully accept the idea of that. So we have to both conceive of criteria, like Matthew's helpfully done, but we also have to pay attention to what we are supposed to review. We're supposed to review the current mechanisms against that criteria. In the plenary call that was held on Tuesday of this week, even just the fortuitous selection of the CCNSO as the example, as far as he indicated, that immediately brought a reaction from the CCNSO members on the call, like, what, are you kidding me? CCNSO isn't accountable to the global internet. It's accountable to the CCTLD managers, and they're the ones that define what accountability is for the purposes of, is the CCNSO serving its members? So we can expect some pushback from each of the SOs and ACs if we try to invent new ways beyond what's in the current bylaws for them to have to be in a different way accountable than they are today. So I'm not suggesting we are afraid to go there. We should go there. But we'll have to be rigorous in our discussion and begin to surface it for the full plenary as really just a sanity check, so we don't end up prescribing something that we can't get adequate support for. Thanks.
Dave, Cheryl, please.
Please go ahead, Cheryl, because we don't see your hand up. Go ahead.
Yeah, I know. I'm literally limited to telephone. I couldn't agree with you more on that. And one of the things I wanted to suggest as we came towards the close of today's call is building on the contributions in the Google Doc and the two aspects that we need to look at. We've got some of them in the tables already, but I'm thinking what might be an interesting exercise is to start to create another matrix which allows us to basically data capture the current state of each of the ACs and SOs in an accountability matrix. If we can also then cross-reference that with some of the criteria that we deem universally or perhaps less so applicable, then that's just a bonus. But the point made by the ASO is one as specifically valid as the point I made on behalf of the CCNSO earlier. And that is the way the ASO works, of course, has a very robust, open and accountable and transparent and indeed very low barrier to entry and engagement policy development process, which functions well and truly outside of ICANN. That, of course, is a value proposition for accountability that we need to recognise and is a status quo aspect. Now, that may never be a particular best practice that is applicable to other ACs or SOs, but if we capture what is actually happening now and then have a little sort of look in the matrix on the compare and contrast, we may be able to start sifting out some specific recommendations that might help float all our boats a little bit higher in the tide. Thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl. I'll note that the table we inserted at page 3 and 4 of the Google Doc is the beginning of that analysis. For each of the SOs and ACs, it describes how the bylaws created us. It describes the current mechanisms that are supposed to be used for accountability, the independent review and the ATRT. But it doesn't.
But I'm well aware of that, and I'm suggesting that we also ensure that we reach out to each of the ACs and SOs, hopefully via the representatives and members they have in our work team, to embellish that with specifics, such as we've had come in from ASO and obviously in the example of the CCNSO.
Exactly. I was only going to add that what you've described would be the next column of that table, that's all, and that we would begin to get the data from those who know those SOs and ACs the best. So I think we violently agree. And then there's two more in the queue, Athena and then Matthew.
Yes, hello, thank you very much. So I understand that, of course, you know, for our work it is useful that we have certain criteria as a point of reference, and I understand also that the group realizes the particularities of ITO and AC, and we cannot have this criteria as a hard criteria, let's say, for that should be fulfilled for SO and AC, given the particularities of each SO and AC. So I would like to note down that these are not hard criteria, so that we do not give the impression that each SO and AC has to really, you know, tick all of these criteria. But these are more like points of reference. Thank you.
Thanks, Athena. Matthew.
Steve and Cheryl, I think you've pointed to something that, and Athena as well, I think you've pointed to something that's absolutely critical for the success of this group, which is we need to work with the SOs and ACs. We cannot be imposing some account mechanism from this working group. So I think that the assessing, the engagement, and the assessing of the accountability mechanisms and tools that the SOs and ACs have has to be undertaken by them. I think what we need to do is really look at encouraging a frank assessment within the SOs and ACs of their accountability tools and mechanisms. And perhaps from that, we as a group may be able to determine at a kind of overall level, the meta level, if you will, what enhancements might be possible as recommendations as a part of this working plan that we eventually will deliver. So as you say, I think I just wanted to reinforce the absolute imperative of not us deciding something in isolation, but working with the SOs and ACs and as Athena said, being very aware of and working with them at the same time. Thanks.
Thank you, Matthew. We've talked about this on a previous call, but as one of your rapporteurs, I'd like to request now that before our next call, can the members on the phone who are part of this group, if you're a part of GNSO, can we try to come back to the next meeting by diving into the GNSO procedures and surfacing the way in which the GNSO does an internal enforcement of accountability? Same thing with respect to Alan and others of you and Cheryl who are on the ALAC, the ASO. I don't see that we have representation from CCNSO on the call, but we certainly have GAC members on the call. I don't think we have any SSAC or RSSAC. But we are supposed to have members from each and every AC and SO be part of each team. I don't think we went out and deliberately recruited them, but if we are missing a perspective, then you're going to have to do some active outreach to request that each AC and SO help us understand the way in which they have accountability mechanisms in their own internal procedures, which are not in the bylaws of ICANN. Because all I had done in the table on pages 3 and 4 was what the bylaws say about outside independent reviews of the ACs and SOs. There's certainly a very rich fabric of accountability mechanisms that Cheryl and Matthew have talked about that are within each and every SO and AC. So we have just 3 minutes left. Let me, Matthew, is your hand still up? And then Cheryl and Farzi, as our co-rapporteurs, I'll turn it over to you for your closing words with a couple of minutes left.
Thanks, Steve. I have nothing else to say. Thanks a lot for participating, and see you next week.
And Cheryl, there's nothing further from you. Thanks for everyone helping to move this along. Hopefully by our next call, we can put some meat on the bones on the table in 3 and 4, pages 3 and 4, to indicate accountability mechanisms and structures that occur inside of an SO and AC. And hopefully that'll get us on the right track. Matthew, at the same time, please try to continue to flesh out those 5 criteria for accountability. Thank you, everyone. Have a wonderful rest of your week.